Good morning, I'm Maxwell Haddad, and this is Video Nasties. Thank you for listening. It is 7:25 a.m., Monday, October 31st, 2022, and I am on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. It's my favorite day of the year, besides my birthday. It's Halloween, people, 2022. The costume that I wanted to wear this year is Severin from Near Dark. I did talk about it on a podcast, I remember now. That never ended up happening. I could still wear it today, but I doubt that's going to happen. I never got my leather jacket. I did find a Jason mask and a Hannibal Lecter mask in my basement. So I almost wore those. Anyway, today I'll probably do what I usually do on my days off, but I'll also eat some candy and watch, do some serious horror movie watching. I plan to pretty much watch horror movies all day, which is what I usually do on Halloween. And then I usually have an all-night horror movie marathon. I was tired from work, so I ended up falling asleep last night. Although I didn't end up sleeping well, I kept waking up, but, so I didn't have the all-night horror movie marathon last night. I may have it tonight, except I do have to work tomorrow, so who knows? Working man here. Sorry, I'm out on the road and there are cars everywhere, so I'm gonna walk back to the house. I did watch two classic horror movies last night. One was The Exorcist, which is, in my opinion, just one of the greatest films ever made, horror or otherwise. And the other one is the movie I want to talk about a little bit right now, along with another movie. I think I'm going to pause here, though, for a second. Be right back. Okay, so today I want to talk, at least at first, about Haxan by Benjamin Christensen, which is a silent horror movie, maybe like one of the first horror movies. I want to talk about that. I'm not sure what year this was released. I want to say 1921. We're talking about, yeah, a legitimate silent movie. And I'm obsessed with silent movies, which you know if you've listened to the podcast. Part of that comes from my obsession with surrealism, because silent films just, they didn't have the element of sound, obviously, which really is half of it when it comes to cinema. Not cinema, because silent movies are cinema, but when it comes to, I guess, movies as we know them, movies in the modern sense, as far as what a movie is, sound is really is half of it, so silent movies didn't have that. I mean, they did have sound. They had music, but they didn't have recorded sound, I guess, is the term that people like to use. They had recorded music, but they didn't have recorded sound, I guess. But even the music would be played by a live orchestra to record it, but also in the theaters. I just took a little hit of hash oil, so I'm drifting. I gotta stay focused here. So, and I am possibly picking up a pre-roll today. I haven't smoked in so long, and I've been avoiding it, but I think I'm ready to just take a puff or two. Anyway, So Haxan is a legitimate silent film. The other film I watched, and I want to talk about, which I watched, last night or early this morning, is Vampire or Vampire. I never know how to pronounce it. I think it's Vampire by Carl T.H. Dreyer. This is an early movie, a surrealist work by the German master, Carl Theodor Dreyer, who also made Passion of Joan of Arc, and it's called Day of Wrath, And then I'm forgetting the name of the other movie that I'm trying to think of. He made this movie Vampire, which is from 1927, I want to say. For some reason, I always think of it as a silent film, but it's not. It is, I guess, probably an early sound movie. There isn't much dialogue, so I mean, it is kind of a silent film. Still, definitely tied to silent cinema, and definitely a relationship with silent cinema in this movie. But there is recorded sound. You hear a woman speaking early on in the movie. So, I don't like to compare and contrast too much on this podcast, but today I do kind of want to talk about Haxan and Vampire in comparison to each other. The subtitle to Haxan, by the way, is A History of Witchcraft or something like that. The History of Witchcraft. I'm not sure, but oh no, Witchcraft Through the Ages, I think is what the subtitle is. So basically, when it comes to these two, if I were to compare them, the thing. Okay, well, first of all, I like Vampire better. I greatly prefer it to Haxan is a bit drier. It's more like a documentary. It's more academic, which I don't necessarily have a problem with, but I prefer the surrealism and the storytelling of Vampire to the kind of I don't know, not clinical nature of Haxan, but just I don't know, the kind of dry academic nature of it. I mean, it really does give you a history of witchcraft through the ages, and it starts with just like title cards about witches throughout history. I guess starts in the 17th century, something like that. And it just kind of tells you this. I mean, it is storytelling in a different way, but it does tell you the story of witchcraft. And Vampire is admittedly pretty thin on story. It's basically like the setup is like this guy travels. It gives you like some history at the beginning of this guy. I forget. I'm honestly kind of forgetting what the story is exactly. His wife dies or something, and he becomes obsessed with witchcraft and dark doings, I guess. And he hears about this woman who's supposedly a witch or something like that, and he travels to this kind of like boat, not boathouse, this like river house, this house by the water. But it's by, I guess it's by a river, it's not by the ocean. And just strange things start happening pretty much immediately. And either these things are really happening, or he's having visions. I don't think we ever really find out. I fell asleep, I didn't finish it. And Haxan, I didn't watch much of. I fell asleep also, but I have seen both previously, so I can talk a little bit about them. Yeah, what was I saying? Okay, yeah, so things get very surreal. Like I said, strange things start happening, and he ends up going to this other house. They're kind of like the rich people, like right up the road, and it's very dreamlike. It has this real, true dreamlike quality to it, Vampire. And I mean, it is a kind of precursor to David Lynch, in a sense. It really feels like you're in a dream. And logic, it's not that logic goes out the window, it's that it has its own logic to it. And I don't mean that in the sense that it like sets up rules and then it follows these rules. Ooh, which speaking of which, I just fucking thought of something. It's more like it just nothing quite makes sense. Like, it's never quite reality, but it's like related to reality. Like, he goes up to this house to like help this old man, or maybe he just ends up there and he ends up helping this old man, and these things just kind of happen in this weird way that they wouldn't happen that way in reality, but there is like a relationship to reality. It's like it's tied to reality, and it feels like it's coming from reality, like it's jumping off from reality, which is what dreams do. I mean, they're kind of things from your daily life or like people you know. These things like show up in your dreams, but it's always weird, like it's always in a weird context. So the movie's kind of like that. So that's Vampyr, that's Haxan. Like I said, I also watched The Exorcist, which I swear to God, it just gets better each time I watch it, and it's like it gets better, more interesting, and more dense every time I watch it. Like, it is a dense movie, and it's really just one of the great horror scripts, screenplays of all time, but then also one of the best pieces of horror directing of all time by William Friedkin. It's interesting that he never, I don't think he ever made another horror movie again. Horror with a capital H. I think that he made, I mean, I know that he made Cruising, but I don't know if that can quite be considered a horror movie. It's more of a thriller in like with a capital T, like the true sense of the term thriller. And then you know, he would delve into crime and I guess some action with Sorcerer and of course To Live and Die in LA, and then The French Connection, which I think is another masterpiece from, I guess from, I think it's from the year before. I always forget what year The French Connection is. Maybe it's 1969. Yeah, so he had two masterpieces right in a row. The French Connection and The Exorcist. I mean, in my opinion, William Friedkin is a genius. Like, the guy's brilliant, and like he is an auteur. But he's kind of an auteur more in the sense of Steven Spielberg, where he doesn't have like a he doesn't have a truly distinct style. It's more that he brings this kind of like, well, not kind of, I mean, he brings a mastery of filmmaking technique to different genres and to each project that he works on. So in that way, he's kind of more Spielbergian. And they were, you know, contemporaries, both part of the New Hollywood. So, and speaking of Spielberg, I wanted to watch Jaws last night too, but I can never fucking find it. It's on like, apparently, and I'm talking about the first Jaws, of course, obviously. It's on AMC Plus. I don't know why I said the first Jaws. It's like saying, oh yeah, I mean the first Exorcist. It's like obviously yes, the first one. The other ones suck. Jaws 2 is okay, but and then I was going to say the original, but they haven't remade Jaws. I mean, it's been ripped off so many times that it's like the equivalent of being remade. It kind of created its own genre, like shark movies, shark attack movies. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about Jaws. I didn't watch it last night, but yeah, Jaws, The Exorcist. Okay, and then the other movie that I want to talk about on today's episode. And I may come back later and talk more. I usually do these all in one go, but this one I might come back later. I might think about it. I just get the feeling that I'll think of other things and want to come back on. Yeah, the other movie I want to talk about is The Hidden, which I watched days ago. I just worked for 4 days in a row, and I was only supposed to work 5 hours yesterday. I worked 8 hours. So I'm a little out of it. I'm not complaining. I'm happy for the hours, but yeah, so I was gonna record, and I just it always happens this way. I just never end up recording on days that I work, unless, you know, maybe I have a shorter shift or something. But I like working at a coffee shop because I like getting up early. I was thinking about this, like I like getting up early and working, and then having and just being done at like 3. That works a lot better for me than working at a restaurant or working at I mean, unless it's like a lunch place or something, but and this is kind of like working at a restaurant, like we have tables open now inside the establishment. Anyway, yeah, or working in a movie theater. You know, I worked at a movie theater for years, and it's like you would work night shifts, you know? And if you had to stay late, I mean, you could be there till midnight, especially when I was a projectionist. I am a projectionist, but I mean, when I was working as a projectionist at this one theater. So anyway, yeah. So what was I saying? Shit, I got distracted because that was my old life. Oh, so yeah, so I just prefer getting up, working my shift, and being done, and then having the night to myself. I prefer that. I don't like working at night because it's like I usually end up waking up fairly early. I don't sleep in too much. I used to sleep in a lot more. So then I have all day where I'm like waiting to go into work and get this over with. And by the time I go in, I'm like, oh, fuck, I really don't want to be working. Instead of just when I go in the morning, when I'm just like, all right, I'm still like half asleep. I don't mind serving some people some coffee. Anyway, that's boring work talk. So, yeah, so the point of that was that I didn't talk about The Hidden on this podcast yet, which The Hidden right now is my pick of the month. I swear to God, it's one of my favorite movies. Like, just upon initial viewing, I had seen like the first 20 minutes and I liked it. I thought it was really weird. And it is a weird movie, but it's not white of the eye weird. Like, if you're paying attention and you're following the story, it all makes sense and it does establish rules and it follows these rules to the end, and it's exciting and it's fun. And it's funny. It all has a sense of humor to it, and it's got great action. It's cr the director that it's credited to is Jack Sholder, I believe is his name. Sholder. It sounds like a fake name to me. Maybe this guy is like really well known in certain circles. I have no idea. I don't know who this guy is. I don't know what else he directed, if anything. Again, I don't know if this is a fake name, a pseudonym. It could be, but the guy's brilliant. I mean, he's great. Whoever directed this fucking movie, the action scenes are great, and yeah, it's really fun. It's really exciting, and I mean, it's such an interesting mishmash of things. I mean, it's number one. I would say it's a science fiction film. Then it's an action movie, or maybe the other way around, but I think of it more as a sci-fi movie first, and then an action movie if I have to pick. But really, it's one of my favorite genres, which is sci-fi action, which you don't see a lot of. I mean, Aliens is the greatest example of this. I guess Neil Blomkamp kind of does that. Not demonic, obviously, but well, actually, no, a little bit in demonic. Yeah, I'm thinking more like District 9, though. Like that is sci-fi action. But yeah, it kind of combines my three favorite genres actually, which is sci-fi, action, and horror. It's kind of like, and kind of in that order. So sci-fi first, then action, then horror, but then also comedy. So maybe that's last. But it's like, I mean, it's kind of like my four favorite genres all in one movie, which is amazing. Yeah, so it's like, I'll give you the basic story, the basic setup. It's really just a movie you have to watch because it's I just love the storytelling in it, the way it's done. It's kind of like you're kind of having to figure it out as it goes along, and there's like, and the thing is, the craziest fucking scene, like the craziest visual in the whole movie happens like early on. And then you're kind of like, what is going, like what did I just see? So that kind of engages you for the rest of the movie. It's basically, I guess, mild spoilers here, but it's basically about an alien who takes over people's bodies, and Kyle MacLachlan, who I love, is in the movie. He's never been weirder, I would say. Even in the David Lynch movies, he's kind of the straight man in David Lynch movies. This did remind me a little bit of Agent Cooper. That's it. Yeah, Agent Cooper in Twin Peaks, which was actually 4 years later. Twin Peaks was 1990, and this was 1986. So this would have been the same year as Blue Velvet. Wow. Those are my two favorite Kyle MacLachlan movies. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. Okay. So yeah, this was a good year for MacLachlan. So yeah, I love his performance in this. He's playing, again, spoiler. He's playing an alien, as well, or he's playing. How do you even say it? I don't know. He's playing the body of a person who's been inhabited by an alien, but a different kind of alien. And this alien is hunting the other alien because the other alien killed Kyle MacLachlan's alien's wife and daughter, I think. So he's this alien is, I guess you could say, pretending to be an FBI agent, which again is interesting, like this kind of weird Agent Cooper connection. I almost get the feeling that the Agent Cooper thing came from this in a way, like the network was like, yeah, but that doesn't make sense either because I was going to say the network was like, yeah, Kyle MacLachlan can star in this show because he already played this kind of role. He already played an FBI agent, so we see that he can do it. But why would a network even hesitate to hire Kyle MacLachlan in 1990? I mean, he was already starring in movies, and he's also Lynch's guy, so like, that Lynch, I'm sure, went to bat for him. If he even needed to, it was probably Lynch, like, yeah, it's Kyle MacLachlan. Like, right from the beginning. I mean, I have no idea. I don't know about the gestation of Twin Peaks, the series, the original series. Anyway, yeah, so he gives a really weird performance. He's great. He's great. I love Kyle MacLachlan. And just so perfectly casted. And the guy who plays like his de facto partner, or the guy who ends up being his partner. No, the alien killed his partner, I think. And his wife? I forget. I guess it doesn't really matter. What matters is the crazy shit that's going on screen. So, yeah, him and his partner, the guy who plays his partner, are great. I recognize the guy. He's like an 80s actor. I'm not sure what his name is. They're great, and they're great together. They have great chemistry. And actually, speaking of that chemistry, my favorite moment in the movie is like when he gets Kyle MacLachlan gets the guy. The other guy's a cop, and he ends up getting thrown. I guess, oh, maybe he's a detective. He ends up getting thrown in a jail cell because they think he's crazy because he's talking about aliens. He is a detective, I believe. He's not like a beat cop. So then Kyle MacLachlan ends up busting him out of jail. And then they have this moment, and then they kind of like team up. They like walk down the hallway together, and it's like so badass. And it's just that moment when it's just like it all comes together. That's near the end, so that's I don't know if you can say that's the climax, but to me that was kind of like that perfect third act moment of just like, oh shit, they're gonna kick some ass. Like it was badass. My favorite line is actually before that, and I'm not fucking remembering what it is. And I wanted to put that in the description of the hidden episode, which is what this episode is quickly becoming. And now I can't fucking remember it. It's something like, open the fucking gate, or something like that, because there's this real kind of like hard ass kind of like cop who's supposed to watch the gate, which keeps the gate is what separates the main part of the police station from the cells where they're, holding people, holding prisoners, I guess you would say. So this guy who's like supposed to watch the gate and let people in, is like, I can't let you in there. Like he says this to this guy who he clearly knows, but the guy's had to turn in this badge. Or no, he's talking to Kyle MacLachlan. But there's like a recurrence. Anyway, I can't fucking remember now. And I will watch this movie again. Just talking about it makes me want to watch it again. It's Kyle MacLachlan who he knows is FBI, but he's like, I can't do that because he ends up having to turn in his badge and his gun, which the partner takes. I don't know. But there's this line Or does the guy say it? I'm not opening the fucking gate. I can't remember. I don't think Kyle MacLachlan says it because he never like raises his voice in the movie. I don't think, or maybe Kyle MacLachlan does say it. Maybe he does say open the fucking gate or something like that. I don't know. I'll get back to you on that one. But there's this great rooftop scene, which is kind of like, it's like the second act climax or something, and it's that moment where I'm like, oh shit, is the movie like almost over? And then I was like, no, it's just like that big scene before the big ending. Kind of like the end, the scene that kind of ends the second act. And this was my favorite part of the whole movie, which is that so the aliens and this one guy at the beginning, right? And he robs a bank, ends up in the hospital after a crazy police chase. And like you can't be killed, like you can be shot. Oh, that's what it is. It's really cool, the mythology of this movie. If the body gets so fucked up that it's I don't know, if it gets fucked up like to a certain point where it's like on the verge of death, I guess, the alien then just switches to another body, a healthier body. So the alien can't ever be killed. It just keeps switching bodies. Well, then we find out later that it actually can be killed, but you need a special gun for that, which Kyle MacLachlan has, which is another spoiler. You're welcome. So it just keeps switching from body to body. So it switches from this one guy who's another 80s actor that I recognize, but I don't know his name. Amazing opening, amazing action sequence. And then the guy ends up in the hospital and switches to this other body, which is another dude, another guy. And then it switches into the body of a stripper. So I'm just like, oh, this is just getting more and more interesting. And so just the whole part with the stripper as the alien, and then she ends up on the roof. Because Kyle MacLachlan and the other cop are chasing her down. And then that's when we first see the reveal of the kind of silver gun that can, turns out it's the only thing that can kill the alien. And Kyle MacLachlan is a different race of alien from a different planet, I believe. And I like when they talk about that and when it gets into like the real sci-fi stuff, because I'm a sci-fi nerd. Yeah, again, the mythology is really cool. It did remind me a little bit of Repo Man, just kind of the vibe and the whole LA thing, and the music is fucking great. You actually find out in one scene the alien doesn't like country, but you find out early on it likes, I guess it's punk or hardcore, or, not really metal, but like hard rock. I don't know. It's just like there's this great song playing during the high speed chase that the alien's listening to in the car. It's just so fucking cool. It's just one of those movies that just seems made for me and that I wish I made. And it's just totally a Max movie. And I'm just like, yeah, I love it. It's just one of my favorite movies. Upon initial viewing, again, I'll watch it more. But I just have the feeling it's going to have great rewatchability, a great rewatch factor, and it's just going to get better and better with each viewing. So, and it also reminds me of the other movie that I watched that night, which was The Fan, with Michael Biehn and Lauren Bacall, which I was not a fan of. It's an okay movie, but there are good things about it, but it's a little boring. Michael Biehn's great. He gives his best performance. And it's the most interesting character he ever played. It's yeah, I mean it's kind of back when he was like a real actor instead of like, an action star. And I actually prefer him as an action star because I don't think Michael Biehn was ever a great actor. I just think he's a great screen presence, and whenever I see him, I'm reminded of the Terminator and the original Terminator and Aliens. So it's just like it's kind of like a nice, warm fuzzy feeling when I see Michael Biehn. He kind of just reminds me of my childhood growing up watching James Cameron movies. So, my mom loves James Cameron, so I don't know. Me and my sister, well, I guess, I don't think my sister was ever as into James Cameron, but like, I don't know. I was always obsessed with Alien and Aliens, the whole series actually. And Actually, I always loved Terminator 2, but now I actually love the first one even more. True Lies was actually my sister's first R-rated movie, though. Incidentally. So, was I saying? Yeah, I got totally sidetracked there. Oh, the fan. Yeah, and then my favorite part of the fan is like this one kind of incidental scene early on when, I mean, it is, I guess, important because you see where Michael Biehn's character works, which is at a record shop. And the music when he walks in is a special song, but it's Do the Dog, which is like a kind of like, I guess, kind of a special deep cut in a way. I mean, that whole first Specials album is classic, but that's not like a, like you hear Ghost Town, like after Shaun of the Dead, you know. I was watching Wendell and Wild on Netflix, and I was like, oh no, they're not using Ghost Town. You can't use it after Shaun of the Dead. I mean, they used it okay. But that song belongs to Shaun of the Dead. But then, I don't know, what's the, oh, of course you hear their version of not Rudy Can't Fail, that's The Clash. What's it called? Oh, A Message to You, Rudy. Yeah. I mean, that's the special song that you always hear. But you don't hear Do the Dog. Especially in a movie like The Fan. I don't know. It's just like there's a special song in a Lauren Bacall movie. How weird is that? That's The Fan for you. But the rest of the movie isn't like that, unfortunately. It's more like Lauren Bacall, and she's at rehearsals for like the stage musical that she's doing. And I like stage musicals. I have no problem with them. But it's just like, I don't know. It's just kind of an odd movie, and it's kind of boring. It's kind of one note. It's like, you know, Michael Biehn is obsessed with Lauren Bacall. He's stalking her. He's sending her weird letters, and it's just like, I don't know. It's almost like an uneventful movie. It's like, I mean, he does like kill people and stuff, but the murder scenes are kind of boring and kind of tame, and it's kind of just like, I don't know. It almost seems like a horror movie made for like, not like old ladies necessarily, but kind of like women of Lauren Bacall's generation who were like aging in the early 80s, and they liked the idea of having a hot young man stalking them. I mean, this is just my, like, I don't know, subtextual reading of it, I guess. Or not even subtextual. More, no, that's more of like a, I don't know, like, who was this movie made for reading of it? And maybe that's me looking at it in some kind of weird, skewed way, but I don't know. It's not like, it's not scary. It's not like a cool, like, bloody horror movie. It's not like, it's like it's not particularly well made. It's just kind of bland and like, you know, I mean, it is, I guess, a well-made Hollywood movie of that time, but it's just, yeah, kind of bland and, yeah, like I said, uneventful. So that's The Fan from 1981 and The Hidden from 1986. Yeah, so I wanted to talk about the Repo Man thing. It is kind of like the vibe kind of reminds me of Repo Man a little bit. Oh, that's how I got sidetracked. With the kind of LA punk vibe, which I love, especially when you throw sci-fi in there. I don't know if the vibe of The Hidden was kind of jumping off from Repo Man or using Repo Man as a reference. I don't know if it was. I mean, Repo Man was 2 years prior, and Repo Man I don't think was ever a hit of any kind. It's a one of the kind of signature cult movies, but I don't think it ever was like commercially successful. I mean, maybe now it is. But don't know. So I don't know if they were jumping off from that. And also The Hidden, I mean, The Hidden I don't think is a like a Hollywood movie with a capital H. I think it's a Canon movie actually. I watched something that had the Canon logo in front of it. I think it was The Hidden. I don't know. But it just, I feel like that, and there was another one that I can't think of, I think, and I think it was after Repo Man. I don't know, just these kind of like 80s LA punk sci-fi movies that just kind of have this like cool, hipster kind of like fuck you vibe to them. It's kind of hard to describe, but watch Repo Man and then watch The Hidden. That would be a great double feature, actually, in that order. And then tell me there's not a vibe connection there. That's all I'm saying. Thank you for listening. I'm Maxwell Haddad. This is Video Nasties. I will be back on maybe later today, if not, maybe tomorrow. If not, maybe the day after. If not, maybe the day after. I just remembered I am actually working Tuesday and Wednesday now because I picked up a shift on Wednesday, but it's a short shift, so you may hear from me then or sooner. Later. Peace.